wait today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, Chris, having heard all these personalities so far, who do you think is the wackiest? Got to be the Mystic Barber, huh?
The Mystic Barber, I think, is a couple of brushes short of a...
He's a couple of brushes short of something we haven't figured out what.
I haven't figured it out yet, but boy, Bob, that was a great editing job. I never would have known that that was condensed down for 45 minutes.
I understand that, along the original so you can hear it there. Try to help.
Boy, you guys sure had some characters back then. We don't have the quality of characters, as was pointed out in the last segment, I think. We don't have the quality of characters today. Prophet Yahweh has been one of my favorites over the last 10 or so years. He was quite a character.
Speaking of characters, here's somebody that I knew fairly well, and he was probably one of the most brilliant people I ever met. At the same time, that brilliance came with a wink in his eye. You didn't know whether he was telling you the truth or not, or whether he was playing a word game with you. And that was none other than Yonah Fortner. Jim, tell us about Yonah.
Well, Yonah was a very complex guy. He had suffered from polio ever since he was maybe less than 10 years old. And, of course, that's a terrible handicap. And he had that throughout his life. He started out on crutches, but as he got older, he got heavier and heavier, and at a given point, I don't think he could even get around that way. But anyhow, yes, he had a brilliant mind. He was a unique guy because, for one thing, he, since he is long gone, I can say this, he could lie to you, absolutely tell you things that were not true and could not be true, and he would sound just the same, just as convincing and just as serious as if he was telling something that you knew was probably true.
So he'd be the guy who could beat the lie detector test.
I would think so, yeah.
Yonah also came up with a theory of extraterrestrialism, and he used the name Y.N. Ibn Aharon. Why did he do that? That was supposedly his Hebrew name?
Yeah. Fortner was his stepfather's name. His I forget what happened to his real father, but his mother remarried a army sergeant named Fortner. His genuine Hebrew name, or whatever you want to call it, was the Ibn Aharon, which means, Ibn means son of, I believe, in some language, and Aharon means Aharon.
Now, in this particular segment, Yonah is railing against the new leadership of an organization called the Borderlands Sciences Research Associates. And understand, folks, this is an organization that came out in the 1940s that was talking about creatures, beings, whatever, from other dimensions. One of the founding theories about alternative UFO research is about 4D UFOs. And this organization was talking about that, but Yonah didn't like the new leadership.
I'd like to ask Yonah about a point he raised a little bit back. He spoke of this BSRA as a defunct organization, or at least in the past tense. And as those of us in saucer research know, and Yonah knows even better, having been in BSRA for many years, it's still a very active group out in California, and maybe there's some more about that we can get into. But what do you have against the present BSRA, if anything?
Well, again, let's have a little bit of history here. BSR is an organization which is associated with something called the 4D theory of UFOs, of flying saucers. The 4D theory is again predicated upon ancient occult concepts that tell us that the universe is the result of a set of vibrations. As you move up and down this scale of vibrations, you get a manifestation and demanifestation, and you get a whole series of parallel universes. And so according to the BSRA theory, the saucers don't come from other worlds, and yet they're not made on our world. They're made on other worlds which are next to our world. These worlds exist in the same space as we do, but not on the same level of vibration. BSRA was organized way back in 1937 by a retired university professor, Dr. Newton Mead Lane, who had been a professor of Romance languages at the University of Wisconsin. And Dr. Lane lived in San Diego, California, and he got to know, shall I say, a number of people who thought of things as he did. And they were basically way out people interested in the borderland regions of physics and cosmology and chemistry. And they organized the Flying Roll Group, which a few years later became Borderland Sciences Research Associates. The organization enjoyed a certain modest celebrity among the occult societies here and in other countries, and a good deal of prestige. And in 1957, Dr. Lane's health began to fail. So we have this interesting panorama, or this interesting view of an aging gentleman who needed a bit of money for his retirement. And so he wanted to sell out, a perfectly legitimate thing. BSRA was, in effect, a small business, I suppose you might say. And it did make money, which is a great novelty in this sort of thing. The public may think that all these magazines earn money, that this is not true. BSR is almost unique in that respect. And so he sold out to a gentleman, and this gentleman felt that Dr. Lane had no right to sell the organization because it was a membership organization, and he adduced some kind of a commentary on the laws of the state of California. And Dr. Lane eventually died of a cerebral hemorrhage without ever having received his money. His widow still has not received the money. Meanwhile, taking advantage of the mailing list built up by Dr. Lane over a period of 20 years, and this is the kind of undertaking where a mailing list will make you or break you, you see. This fine gentleman has continued the organization and is paying himself a fine salary out of the proceeds. So we decided that the time had come to set up another lecture opposite him, and I'm going to do what I can to talk about the history of BSRA and about the 4D or etheric theory of the flying saucers in particular.
So whatever happened with that? So he was going to have a competing lecture with the new head of BSRA?
Yes, I had forgotten all about that. I can't give you any details. I think, yes, he deliberately had his lecture on the same night and the same time. Presumably both of these would be in New York. And I guess it was a popularity contest to see how many people each lecture would draw. I just don't remember the details, but that's the kind of thing that Yona would do. He never did name the guy that took over from Mead Lane, not in the section that you just played. I did know the name myself, but I can't think of it right now.
So that will be lost in the annals of time. Bob, you remember the name. I don't.
I'd have to recheck the entire discussion there. He may have mentioned it, but I didn't include it. If he did, I left it out possibly for legal reasons.
Well, BSRA, of course, was a pioneer organization in 4D UFO research, and we know nothing about it nowadays.
Ah, wait a minute. It was Riley Crabb.
Riley Crabb.
I know that.
Well, yeah. Now Riley Crabb's heirs are probably listening to this episode, and they're preparing to sue us. But sorry, Yona is long since gone. This happened in the 1960s. There's no jurisdiction. So stay away from us. Don't stay away from this. We have Jim Mosley, the editor and publisher of Saucer Smear. Bob Zanotti, radio broadcaster, and this is a fascinating session, neighbors. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraganiX.com, Terraganics.com. Or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can! It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Love gardening but don't love seeing your hard work destroyed by wildlife? Then use the number one most effective deer and rabbit repellent you can buy, PlantSkid. PlantSkid repellent protects gardens, trees, and landscaping by emitting an odor that browsing animals associate with predators. So animals avoid plants before they nibble, not after. PlantSkid is made in the U.S. from non-toxic, 100% organic, environment, and pet-friendly ingredients. Other repellents wash off in the rain. Not PlantSkid. It's guaranteed to outlast all other repellents. PlantSkid was the first animal repellent to be OMRI-listed organic and now comes in liquid spray, powder concentrate, or easy-to-use granular. Just sprinkle around your garden. For proven protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents, use PlantSkid. Member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Find a dealer near you at PlantSkid.com. That's PlantSkyd.com. Ask about our new vole repellent when you call 800-252-6051. That's 800-252-6051. PlantSkid. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed. Or your money back.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Yes, Yonah Fortner was quite a character. Now, he told me a story, and as you say, Jim, Yonah could tell stories. He said that he, after he had gone to the West Coast, don't know when that happened, he was an influence when George Lucas created the character of Yoda. He said it was based on Yoda.
What was the name of the character?
Okay, you never saw the Star Wars movies, did you, Jim Moseley?
Not that much, no. Okay. I always figured that I got enough science fiction in the UFO field to the point that I didn't actually need to go into admitted science fiction, so I kind of avoided it.
Well, I knew Jonas somewhat in his final years. He sent me some copies of magazines that contained stuff about UFOs and Fortean events, and then he was gone. Jonas Fortner, but also one of the pioneers in investigating ancient astronauts.
No, I believe it was sometime around 2005 that Jonas died. That's what I was saying.
Right. He wasn't a very old man even then. He must have been in his early 70s, late 60s, something like that.
Could I ask a question here about Jonas? I have in my mind that he was, I know he was a theologian, very deep into theology. He was a biblical and probably Talmud scholar as well, and a great linguist. But was he actually, or wasn't he actually, also an ordained rabbi?
Let me take that one. He, I think I mentioned before, he could tell a story with no foundation of truth as well as one that was true. He had degrees that I couldn't repeat because I don't remember them, but he had at least a couple of degrees from institutions that at least I had never heard of. Whether these were real or not, I haven't the faintest clue. I never saw any proof of them. But he did say in later years, when he was still in New York before he moved out to California, he did finally get a real degree from Columbia University. Now, I never saw any proof of that either. But with or without a degree, he could talk endlessly and very intelligently. He was really a unique character.
Now, you, Jim, had a second life. You would go to Peru, and you did, shall we say, amateur archaeological expeditions, or as you called it, grave robbing. You'd retrieve ancient artifacts.
Amateur archaeology sounds much nicer. As I get older, I think I'd rather call it that.
Rather than confessing yourself to be a grave robber. But there was a time that you went on Bob's show with Jonas in 1964, where you talked about, and you can explain this after this brief segment, you talked about some buried treasure in Peru that you possibly were in a position to recover, and maybe it was worth a fair amount of money. Let's hear Jim and Jonas talk about it, and then maybe Jim can give us some background.
Yes, I became quite well known for my my activities, we might say, and to the point that I found it advisable to sell my property in Peru back in 1960 and 61, and I haven't been back since. I know a place in Peru which has a fortune in gold sitting there. It's merely a question of having the right contacts, you might say, in order to be able to get permission to dig. And
in other words, any first cousin of the president of Peru, or
that's right. My offer to any listener to your show is that I would be glad to talk to them if they think or feel that they have a way of getting this. I might say that there's no financial problem, there's no problem of suffering through jungles or deserts or anything else. I know the exact location, there's no maps needed, there's no question of hunting for it and perhaps not finding it.
And there's no
question about it being there. There's no problem whatsoever except just getting the permission. So if someone thinks that they know how to do that, let them get in touch with me.
Well, as a matter of fact, Jim, to be perfectly fair about this, the reason why that treasure is still there is because no one has been able to get permission to take it out. And it's in such a public place that the authorities don't dare take it out either.
Well, would you agree with me, Jonas, from what you've heard about it, that it would run into many thousands of dollars if it were dug up?
Oh, I think it might go into a bit more than that.
I'll tell you what, we're going to stop the segment there because we don't have enough time, but let's have the background, Jim. This is 1964, and you're talking about hidden treasure. Give us the background. Did anyone ever recover it?
Well, that's kind of a complicated thing. The bottom line is, I'm quite sure by now that I was wrong. I think whatever treasure was there had been dug up previously. The funny part, I'd have to say, is that this was almost a historical landmark. It was one of the best-known ruins in Peru. I think it was called the Temple of the Sun. And it was right next to the Pan-American Highway. I guess they built the highway just because this thing was there from ancient times. Well, no, nobody could ever get permission to dig there because it was so obvious. It would be like doing illegal treasure hunting in Central Park would be a good analogy. So nothing ever came of that. I never got the permission. I made a few feeble efforts, but in the long run, I started to realize that whatever was there had already disappeared. Probably archaeologists of the early 20th century dug up the whole thing.
Was this something that you heard about or got some evidence about?
It was, you could say, well known. I mean, again, the place was well known, and you could look at this fortress and see holes all over the place where people had been digging in the past, and that, see, that's why this is complicated. That is a clue that the people had been digging in the past, and if there was anything there, they would have already gotten it. Frankly, offhand, I don't know why I was so convinced that there was anything still there. There might have been some left, but most of it would be gone.
Now, this is Tiwanaku?
No, no. And I forget what culture it was. It was right along the Pan-American Highway, north of Lima. Somewhere around Trujillo, I think.
Fascinating. Maybe somebody has discovered that treasure. But you felt it was worth a lot of money. So you could have been a multimillionaire, and maybe you would have had as much money as Warren Buffett had you recovered this treasure.
I would rather think about the times that I was exactly on the right track instead of off on a tangent. Again, extremely briefly, there is a very well-known area in northern Peru called... I'll skip the name for right now. And I did get permission from the ranch owner to dig, and we did dig up a vast amount of pottery. And on one very good day out there, Batan Grande, of course, anybody that knows Peruvian archaeology that's listening would know that name. And give any value to it that you want. That, again, depends on very complex factors. But I like to say now, somewhere around $500,000 in gold in one day, in one tomb.
Wow. Jim Mosley, editor of Saucer Smear, joining us with Bob Zanotti and Gene. And Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP. As slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
For a long time, you've heard me talk about building your own food supply with Eat Foods Direct. As a listener, you know why you need to have a supply of the best storable food on the planet. Every day, we document the attempts to take control of our lives. But there's one thing we can all control, your greatest dependency, food. Eat Foods Direct products are made with only the best ingredients and none of the trash and contaminants like trans fats, GMOs, or MSG. This food is nutrient dense and tastes great. It's simple to make, portable, and has a shelf life of up to 25 years. Now with Eat Foods Direct, you'll get the most affordable, best tasting food you can buy. And the new products and pricing will blow you away. Compared to other food sources, including home cooked meals, you can cut your food cost in half. You just can't afford to ignore this. Call 800-409-5633. Or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex for specials. Don't let this offer pass you by. Call 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. More of the best for less guarantee.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you, too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
This is Hilly Rose, and I hope that you do listen to the Paracast, because you will learn a great deal about the paranormal.
Bob Zanotti, Jim Moseley on the Paracast with Gene and Chris. Fascinating visit to the 1960s and the very unique and sometimes over-the-top or outrageous personalities. And one of the more fascinating guys that I knew then, he was one of my favorite people. Certainly in addition to Jim, of course, and Bob. But we're talking about Yona, of course. Yona Fortner was one of my favorites. But also Jack Robinson. Tell us about Jack Robinson.
Well, he was, you might say, a student of the occult. He, too, had a big library. It was his hobby, and when saucers became popular, he sort of transferred into that. He lived in a very modest apartment in Jersey City, and he had a modest job in a bank over in Manhattan, and it took him quite a while every day to get back and forth to work, and that was his day job, and about all that he was able to do, not having a lot of money to travel or anything. And he was just one of the inside circle, and he was on Zanotti's show and Long John's and so forth. He was an interesting guy, long gone. That's all I can tell you.
I would just like to add this very quickly. He was also very big on yoga, and he was an amateur hypnotist.
That is correct, yes. Yes, I saw him hypnotize somebody one time. I think he really knew how to do it, yeah.
He was a fascinating character. And this particular story, he's taking us back to the time before he met his second wife, Mary, back in the 1940s. And the background is, at that time, he was a reader of Amazing Stories magazine. And Amazing Stories ran, I guess, novels or short novels from Richard Schaefer, who claimed to have visited beings in the caves. They were first presented as science fiction, heavily edited by the editor of Amazing Stories, of course, Ray Palmer. As listeners of the Paracast know, I met and knew Ray Palmer very slightly. I also met Richard Schaefer and knew him more than slightly. We exchanged lots of correspondence over the years. But this takes us to Jack Robinson during World War II, where he's living by himself in a rooming house and meets this very curious character. Part one, Jack Robinson tells us about Steve Brody.
The story happened back in the latter part of the year 1944. I moved into a house, the rooming house. I later learned that Steve Brody lived down below me. He picked a larger room directly beneath mine as a studio. He painted. Steve, it seemed, did not trust people necessarily for some odd reason. He seemed to fear people. His eyes looked sad. As a matter of fact, he looked almost as if he were ready to cry. He, first of all, never ate meat. Second, he seemed to be afraid that someone might be attempting to sneak up behind him. He also had a habit of glancing back over his shoulder as if he were still afraid that someone might be sneaking up behind him. If I were on the street with him at all, why, he'd continually look behind him. If anyone passed his door, he would stop and glance at the door. This I noticed when I'd be visiting him. If footsteps went past his door, he'd stop and glance at the door, make sure the door was locked, and sort of hesitate, regardless of what he was doing. I knew that it wasn't the law he was afraid of, because he seemed to be happy to talk to a policeman. Whenever I met Steve, once in a while you'd meet him in the hall, I'd mention art and the fact that I would also like to paint. He became a little bit less reticent with me. Then one day he finally allowed me to come into his room, and it finally reached a point where I could manage to tap on his door, and as long as I identified myself, he'd open the door. I know now that what he was painting was perhaps unconscious memory, although at the time he couldn't tell me where he got the ideas from. But he would paint on this canvas some of the most weird and eerie-type landscapes. If you can envision a scene more drastic in color and in character than Death Valley, Painted Desert, or what have you, the scenes always seem to have more than one sun in them. They sometimes might seem to have more than one sun, and sometimes there might even be a moon appearing. The scenes would have more than one shadow sometimes. We'll say that there were only one sun. But there would be a stronger shadow from another direction than cast by the light of that sun. And maybe low on the horizon there might be a moon appearing. The scenes were not of this world. And I don't know why it was, but I always got the feeling when I glanced at these pictures that some odd, weird type of creature might suddenly come jumping over the hill after me or come out from behind. I always got the feeling that I didn't want to be on that particular planet or place. And if I were there, I would have wanted to have left immediately. This time of my life was in around the time when the Shaver mystery first started. And I picked up the first issue of the Shaver mystery, the one that contained I Remember Lemuria. As I came home, ascended the stairs and noticed the light under Steve's door. After identifying myself, he let me in the room. Suddenly, Steve noticed, and while talking with him, he noticed the magazine stuck in my coat pocket. It was sort of a colorful edition. I think there was red sticking out of the pocket. He says, "What's that in your overcoat pocket?" And I told him, I said, "Oh," I said, "it's just a book some fellow has written. It has a story in it about some people that live underground." And Steve looked startled, frightened. And then all of a sudden, he blurted out the word Dero. He has mentioned a word that he shouldn't know. Why did he know it? And I persuaded him finally. Under a very, very strict personal promise that I would not reveal what he was about to tell me. And there's only one reason why I am revealing that, as I'll tell you later on. About an incident that had happened to him. It seemed that 7 years before he had met me, he was out in the West with a friend. They were in that region because they were working in regards to sort of a pet project that Steve had. The idea was to gather sort of semi-precious stones and to mount them and sell them in sort of jewelry. And that way they managed to make a little bit of money. And they went out there because there was a mesa out there which seemed to have a certain kind of stone that they particularly wished to obtain and then to probably grind down and to mount into rings or pins or what have you. They got out to the town that was nearest to the mesa, although it was a long way away. The people in this town, and I don't know why, I'm not sure, but I sort of gathered from questions that I threw at Steve that the town was in Arizona, although Steve would never tell me the name of the town. But the people in this town didn't want these two men to go out on the desert. They warned them, said that several people had disappeared without any trace in that section of the desert out toward that mesa. And Steve and his partner laughed off the warnings, purchased enough provisions to last them for a little while, and left the next morning. Steve and his partner reached the base of the mesa, which towered up above them. They sort of set up a little bit of camp and started searching for the semi-precious gems that they were looking for. And while they were doing so, he heard his companion expletive, all right? At any rate, Steve looked up, and as he did, he saw a black, cowled figure which seemed to come right out of the rock at the base of the mesa. And this, he said, was joined by another figure which is also black and cowled.
Part two of the Steve Brody story coming from the late Jack Robinson. You're with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to dreamhost.com/radio, dreamhost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
And now another CentOS Game Changer with sports broadcaster Aaron Andrews.
I'm here at my favorite car rental in sunny Miami. With me is the manager, Beth. I see your team has a new look for the season.
Yeah, they just got uniforms, and my female employees are especially excited about the great styles. This flat out wasn't an option when men's uniforms were the only choice.
Well, it seems these young ladies are really hustling out here. What made the change for you?
Yeah, well, our playbook hinged on one big detail, women's workwear by CentOS. These clothes are designed by women for women. When they look good, they're happier, and our guests notice.
Well, judging by their extra effort, this team is going to the next level with CentOS uniforms. Let's go up to the booth for more.
Finally, a line of women's workwear they want to wear. This is one of many expert services CentOS can tackle for your business. Don't settle for less. Call CentOS at 1-800-CINTAS-6 or visit CentOS.com/radio and tell them to bring in the team with the white truck.
Attention, mindless criminals, thugs, and thieves. Go ahead, break a leg. American homeowners are fed up with your door kick-ins and forced entries. We now dare you to try your boot against any door reinforced with the Door Sentinel. The Door Sentinel pack includes a steel door jam plate with 3.5-inch screws, a lock shield, and hinge shields. The Door Sentinel installs in minutes, securing any front, side, or back doors, even French doors. Criminals, be forewarned, your lake will break before the Door Sentinel will budge. Even if you have an alarm system, back it up with the Door Sentinel. Basic products starting under $20. Order your Door Sentinel today for your home, garage, or any building you own or rent at MySafeDoor.com. That's MySafeDoor.com or call 678-648-6757. That's 678-648-6757. Get your peace of mind back with Door Sentinel. The Door Sentinel. Always on guard.
Introducing a diabetes breakthrough, an easy, natural, organic way to bring relief to diabetics. Introducing MDS Forte, a concentrated super strength extract formulated for those who are looking for relief. What can MDS Forte do for you? MDS Forte reduces glucose levels safely and effectively, reduces cholesterol and triglyceride levels, increases HDL or good cholesterol while reducing LDL or bad cholesterol. MDS Forte reduces A1C, improves eyesight and circulation to the limbs, and helps with weight loss. Is non-toxic, caffeine-free, 100% natural, 100% organic, and comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Waiting for the side effects disclaimers? With MDS Forte, there are none. Order a 25-day treatment of MDS Forte by calling 213-405-5355, 213-405-5355, or visit bestbloodsupport.com. That's bestbloodsupport.com for MDS Forte, a diabetes breakthrough.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
A cliffhanger, right? Part two of the Steve Brody story on the Paracast with Gene and Chris and Bob Zanotti and Jim Mosley. We hear more from Jack Robinson.
The first figure, Steve told me, pointed to sort of a slim, rod-like instrument. Almost pencil-like, he said, in his direction, and Steve said that he was unable to move. He did hear his partner, who was farther away and behind him, get to his feet and start to run. And Steve said the second figure pointed a similar type rod at this partner of his, only from this rod, a light emanated. And Steve heard a scream when this intense, thin beam of light emanated from this. And his partner, he heard scream, and then he began to smell burned flesh. In the meanwhile, since he couldn't move, he couldn't see what had happened to his partner. The second figure then left the base of the mesa, came towards Steve, and he had what Steve described as a couple of, well, he said it was somewhat like a headset, except that it wasn't a headset. The type of instrument, whatever it was, went behind Steve Brody's ears. And Steve said from then on he knew nothing until he awakened later on. He awakened in a cage, he said. And at this point, Steve showed me. It left a scarred place in his head in which no hair grew. A section behind both ears as large as, not quite as large as a half dollar, but about that size. At any rate, all that Steve remembers about his captivity, because this is exactly what it was that he was awakened three or four times. I don't remember which it was he told me, whether it was three or four times. But each time he was penned up with other humans, male and female. And it was seen that these other people knew something about where he was, because they told him he was in an underground cave, that he was a Dero slave. And they mentioned the word Dero evidently to him, because this was where he got the idea. They kept telling him he was in the caves, that the masters were the Deros, and that they were cruel. Well, at any rate, when Steve was evidently finally released, although how he didn't know or why he didn't know, he said he merely found himself fully conscious walking down Broadway in New York City. And
He had on much the same clothes, exactly the same clothes, I should say, not much the same clothes. He had on exactly the same clothes he had been wearing on his prospecting trip, except they were a little bit older, a good deal older. He had all the items in his pockets that he had been carrying, including $100 in bills. And he had the persistent feeling that this had been only practically yesterday. Although, when he felt his beard, it denied the fact that it had been yesterday, for he had a very long beard. Steve went in and got a haircut and a shave. And what he did was the particular time that he discovered what the date was, because he had a chance to pick up and look at the newspaper, and he discovered that he had lost 2 years from his life. To more or less finish the story, I had kept my mouth shut about this while I knew Steve, while I lived at the furnished room, because in around this date, I met my wife, Mary, and we then moved away. I moved into another town. And, I don't know exactly how long ago it was. I forget exactly how long ago after that it was. But I came back to see Steve. I made a special trip into Jersey City, only to learn that Steve no longer lived there. The only thing was, the landlady wanted to know, if I found out where he lived, please tell her, because she wanted to send him his things. I finally said good day to her and started out. And as I came out of the house, I ran into a chap who was a traveling salesman who lived on the first floor. Now, he knew Steve. He more or less figured that Steve was a nut because he was so peculiar. And I said, I can't understand why Steve would sort of leave the way he did. He said, you know, there's something funny about that guy. He said, I saw him. He said, shortly after the landlady said he left. I said, where? He said, well, you know, he says, I travel all over the Western world. I said, I know. He says, I saw him on a train in Arizona. And you know, he was drunk or drugged or something. He says, I don't know. I said, what do you mean? He never took drink. He wouldn't take drugs. And I don't see how he could be doped if he didn't take drugs or anything. He said, well, I walked up to him. And he said, I spoke to him. He said, he never even looked at me. He was sort of glancing sideways out of the window of that train. He said, somewhere in a little town in Arizona. He says, I don't even remember the name of the town. Just a little whistle stop. He says, and I went up ahead, he said, to the lavatory. He said, train stopped, he said, and I came out. He says, and Steve was gone. He evidently got off at that little station. And he says, I don't know why, because there wasn't anything there for anybody. And I'm afraid that, to my knowledge, that's about the most I can tell you about what happened to Steve Brody. It would seem to me that the Deros had him again in some way, possibly under some type of mech ray or what have you, mind control of some sort, and that Steve won't be back again. And darn it all, anyhow, it's the thing that got me into the Shaver mystery and into the flying saucer field.
So, Jim Moseley, what was your take on this story that Jack Robinson told so many times in so many places?
Well, now that I hear it again, I remember it vaguely. I think I told you on the phone the other day, I'm not even sure if Jack Robinson believed it. I rather think, although I can't prove it, that this was something he had heard. He didn't make up the story. It's just a question of whether he believed it or if anybody else should believe it. I think it was interesting and different, and it was like a calling card that he had when he wanted to meet other people in the occult field and later on in the saucer field. It was sort of an introduction that gave him something special and weird and interesting to talk about, and whether he really took it all that seriously, I certainly don't know. Whatever Steve was, he was indeed extremely strange, if not worse than that, and whether the Dero part is true or not, it doesn't really matter. That's what I would say.
What's your take on it, Bob? You've heard this story many times.
Yes, and I can remember sitting there at the table in Jersey City. I think you were there too at the time, Gene, and watching it, and I've spoke many times to Jack. He was always a sincere individual. I always had a lot of faith in him. I trusted him. It would be hard for me personally to think that he made this up. I mean, I can't say he didn't. I can't be sure. But my gut feeling is I believe he is telling an accurate story the way at least he perceived it or lived it. I can't see him making up something like this. It just doesn't...
Oh, no, I'm not saying that he made it up. I'm saying that he did hear it, and he probably repeated it correctly, but that doesn't mean he believed it.
Jim Moseley, tell our listeners where they can find Saucer Smear.
Saucer Smear is available at P.O. Box 1709, Key West, Florida, 33041. We'll send you a free sample copy of Saucer Smear, and if you'd like it, you can send us some money sometime down the line and go on from there.
Bob Zanotti, do you have any current projects?
Well, my pet project, I worked for Swiss Radio International for 32 years. That station closed. It was a shortwave broadcasting station. When it closed, I decided to keep the tradition of English language classic radio reporting alive, so I started SwitzerlandInSound.com. If you have any interest in Switzerland, features, places to go, destinations, the culture, the politics, the society, it's all there. And if you look under vintage features, you'll find a few choice offbeat features that I did over the years.
Chris O'Brien has OurStrangePlanet.com. A special thank you to the memory of Jack Robinson, wherever he may be, Yona Fortner, even Dominic Lucchesi, August C. Roberts, perhaps even the Mystic Barber, wherever they are. We remember them. Bob Zanotti, Jim Moseley, thanks for joining us on the PowerCast.
Great to get back after nearly 50 years.
Jim?
Yes.
Say something.
I just did.
The PowerCast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the PowerCast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNLive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNLive.com. Again, that's GCNLive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it led back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.